Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, November 24th, 2013. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on this edition of Weekend Ozarks at Large, the Affordable Care Act and the Marshallese population of Northwest Arkansas. Jacqueline Froelich has that report. And the Rock City Times. It's Arkansas's second most unreliable news source. We'll talk to Greg Henderson, the man behind the satirical news site.
All right. But first, November is a busy month. It's a month dedicated to philanthropy. November is this year's month dedicated to novel writing, and not to mention Thanksgiving, a month for giving thanks. November is also a month committed to adoption. And while all adoption-related issues are important, National Adoption Awareness Month focuses on adoption of those children currently in foster care. According to a July 2013 report by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families, close to 400,000 children were in foster care as of September of 2012. Just over 25% of those were waiting to be adopted, meaning they had no hope of being reunited with their biological parents. In Arkansas, DHS's Division for Children and Family Services is responsible for all of the children who come into foster care due to unsafe situations in their homes or because they have been abused or neglected. Amy Webb is Director of Communications for Arkansas Department of Human Services, or DHS. She said that the goal is to always get children back with their families when it is safe to do so.
But unfortunately, in some situations, it's not safe to keep them with their families. And DHS will take the steps necessary to terminate the parental rights of the parents and try to find these kids' forever families who will provide them safe and stable and loving homes.
At any given time, Webb says there are between 3,800 to 4,000 children in the state's foster care system. Some may be there for just a few days, or some for much longer. Of those, more than 500 kids are in need of forever homes, or are available for adoption, matching that national percentage of about 25%. There is a huge need for both foster and adoptive parents. Currently, there are just 1,000 foster parent homes for those 4,000 children. Many homes do take multiple children, but Webb says the goal is to have more families in each county so that DHS has options when trying to find the right fit for both the children and the foster parents. Often, there are sibling groups, and DHS tries hard to keep them together. The processes for becoming a foster parent or an adoptive parent are similar.
Once you reach out to us, we'll do the basic things like criminal background checks, home visits, that sort of thing, to make sure that, you know, we have the right people coming into the system wanting to take care of these children. These children have, you know, already been in vulnerable and tough situations, and we don't want to put them in, you know, even tougher situations. Once you kind of go through the approval process, are required, particularly for adoptive parents, they're required to take 30 hours of training plus some CPR.
If someone is interested in adopting, it is not necessary to first be a foster parent. Some of the children in need of forever homes can be seen in the Arkansas Heart Gallery. Many prospective adoptive parents might turn to a private agency. And adoption through DHS is much different.
There is no charge for adopting children in the Department of Human Services care, and that's the biggest difference between that and private agency. Another big difference is, you know, we don't have, a lot of people want young children, infants, newborns, and we don't have a lot of infants or newborns that are available for adoption. We have, you know, a wide range of children, but we have a really big need for people who would be willing to take in sibling groups and also older kids.
There are many participants involved when a child is removed from their home, from law enforcement to the caseworker, a DHS attorney, a lawyer representing the parents, to the judge. Yet the system is still worn thin. With so many kids to represent, the state does what it can, yet often falls behind. Thankfully, there are private nonprofit organizations that step in to help. Denise Basham is the volunteer coordinator for CASA, or Court-Appointed Special Advocates, of Sebastian County. Basham says the national organization got its start in 1977 with a juvenile judge in Seattle.
He would go to bed at night and he would worry about, you know, the cases he was hearing and what was happening with these kids. And so he just decided just to kind of do an outreach and ask people if they would volunteer to help look into these cases more and to check on these children and to see what was going on so that when he made his decisions in court, he had more information.
There are numerous CASA offices in the state of Arkansas, including Northwest Arkansas and this one on Townsend Avenue in Fort Smith. Sebastian County is second in the state behind Pulaski County for the number of foster children in their system, though the population here is much less and more rural. Basham says there are over 500 kids in foster care at any given time in the county, and CASA represents about half of those with their 50 volunteers. That's right, every CASA agent that appears in the courtroom is a volunteer. Basham says that's their main job, just as it was in 1977. To be the eyes and ears for the judge.
We go in and visit the child in their placements, and we talk to the parents, biological parents. We try to encourage reunification and encourage the parents to do what they need to do to get their children back home, because it's a state law that, you know, you have to work toward reunification for the first year. The DHS provides a lot of services, and parents get kind of like blown away when they get hit with all these services they need to do. And so we're children's advocates, but we also try to, you know, direct or facilitate parents and everybody to get on track.
Children can be moved from one foster home to another for numerous reasons. A CASA volunteer can be a consistent contact for the child, a regular visitor wherever they are, whether in a home or at a hearing. The volunteer actually writes a report and makes recommendations. Judges listen to these agents just as they would a DHS worker or an attorney, making the impact they have on children's lives dramatic. Volunteers go through a 30-hour training program over a two-week period and must devote about 10 hours each week to their case. A CASA volunteer won't leave a child. They stick with them all the way to permanence, whether that is going home with their biological parents or with an adoptive parent.
And even when they become an adoptive placement, we need to check on them until the adoption is finalized. Sometimes we help by just staying after people to make sure that adoption takes place and stays on track, you know. So that's what we do. We really want to stay with that child until we see that child find permanence.
Basham says that CASA tends to get the most severe cases out there because they can't provide a volunteer for every child in the system. As a result, fewer than half of the kids they deal with are reunited with their biological parents, compared to the state average of about 75 to 80%. Prior to her paid position with the agency, Basham herself was a CASA volunteer. She now volunteers her services to yet another organization in the field, The Call, Children of Arkansas Loved for a Lifetime. We will learn more about The Call just ahead on Ozarks at Large. As we return to the story on National Adoption Awareness Month, we visit with members of The Call, Children of Arkansas Loved for a Lifetime. It is a statewide Christian organization whose motto is No Waiting Children in Arkansas Foster Care. The organization does not want children sitting in a DHS office waiting for a home. They want them to have an open home immediately. The Call started in Pulaski County and is now in 29 counties across Arkansas. Megan Scott is a staff member of the group representing Crawford and Sebastian counties.
We help DCFS recruit volunteers for the needs that they have. But basically what we do is we go into churches, we share the need for foster and adoptive families with the churches, we recruit the families out of the churches, we help DCFS train them, and once they're open, we continue to support the foster families.
Statewide, The Call has opened 468 foster families, and 193 have gone on to become adoptive families. And from the time when the agency came to this area in 2010, The Call has opened 52 homes. 33 of those remain active foster homes, with 18 more homes in the process of becoming active, all recruited from contact with congregations. Kids in Sebastian County are being sent to foster homes all over the state because there are not enough homes close by. This takes them away from extended family members, removing them from school, detaching them from anything that could be stable or normal, and requiring them to travel for court dates and visitations. According to Scott, The Call is the only Christian organization to be successful in partnering with a state in the nation. She says that as a Christian, she is commanded by James 1:27 to help orphans. The verse reads, "Religion that is pure and undefiled before God, the Father, is this: to visit orphans and widows in their affliction." Clay Warnock felt that calling. He and his wife were empty nesters and decided to start fostering in 2003. They had many kids come and go. Some got adopted, some went home, until they got a group of three sisters. And when they heard that they weren't going home, Clay knew that they already were home. Now 21, 12, and 10, the girls were 1, 3, and 12 when they went into the Warnock home.
I had heard about the call starting in Pulaski County, and then it quickly, other counties saw what was happening and had my resource worker came and was reviewing, evaluating our home, and she said, "You really should get the call started in our area." And I said, "Yes, I should," and it started from there.
Warnock's passion for kids is easily sensed. He says that when they got the girls, as he refers to them, in 2005, he and his wife immediately started praying for their family, as reunification is the ultimate goal. Clay saw those prayers answered. To further his ministry work, Clay went along with a friend to a prison in southern Arkansas. He knew that the father of the girls had been in and out of prison and thought on the way down about the chances of running into him. His friend pretty much said that the chances were slim. Clay walked out to introduce himself to some of the guys in the group and...
The guy in front of me turns around and holds out his hand and says, "Hello, sir, my name is Holden." And I said, "What's your first name?" He said, "Vernon." And I said, excuse me. I had to go back and talk to the guy that I came down with. I said, "I just met Lily's dad." So anyway, after the service was over, I tapped Vernon on the shoulder and he turns around. I said, "Vernon," he said, "you remember my name?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "I've been praying for you for almost 8 years." He said, "What?" I said, "Yeah, your daughter Lily, I fostered her about 8 years ago and I've adopted her." And he said, "What about Eve?" "Eve is our middle daughter." I said, "Yeah, we fostered and adopted her and Delicia too." And he said, "Eve's my daughter too." So I said, "I think you and I are fixing to become really good friends, Vernon." He said, "I've been praying that God would have my girls in a good home." And he said, "Now I know they are."
Vernon got out of prison in March and is working on a relationship with the girls. Clay says he wishes he could take the credit, but gives the credit to God, who led him to foster. Heather Carroll is yet another foster turned adoptive parent. Yet she is not directly involved with a related organization. Through a friend, Carroll learned of the need for foster homes in Sebastian County, and then she realized she knew a child in care.
I had worked for the public school system for quite a few years and became involved with this young lady that was in a classroom, and since then realized that she had been removed from her family and got involved and specifically said, "If I can have her, I'll open my house," which I did in 2009, and then I ended up adopting her in 2010.
Since the adoption of her daughter, Carroll has continued to foster. She has had numerous children from newborn to 18 in her home, even children with children. She has one biological child, a son, who is now 23.
I have since adopted another child that had no intention of keeping when we got him. He was a five-month-old baby. He's been with us for over 3 years now, and he's legally ours.
When she says we, us, ours, Carroll is referring to her family as herself, her son, and her adoptive kids, and herself and her own parents. See, she's a single parent. She continues to foster children, though her oldest biological son is out of the house. It is still quite a balancing act for this working mom.
My daughter has special needs, and I knew that when I adopted her. So she receives services through a local agency in Fort Smith. My youngest is in daycare, and the foster that I have right now goes to daycare as well. It's very hard. I run all day. I run all night. We get it done. We all work together. I try to teach my kids and the kids in my home to be as independent as they can, as their abilities. But, you know, we work on laundry. We do all those things. We do things together. We work as a team.
Though Carroll did not work with the call, she did work with CASA and says they are a wonderful organization to have. not to discredit DHS because they do have so many kids on their plate. She realizes that CASA has fewer kids per representative. When she grows up, Carol wants to be a CASA. And if you're interested in fostering or adopting,
I always say, you know, you're your best advocate. Call DHS. Continue calling DHS. They're crazy busy. Don't worry about calling and saying, hey, where does my application stand? Where do things stand? You know, because there are kids out there that need you.
An adopted child herself, perhaps it is just in Carol's nature to nurture the needy. She never thought this would be her family, but says it has been rewarding and fabulous. To learn more about the organizations in today's story or about becoming a foster or adoptive parent, visit our website, OzarksAtLarge.com. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. Under the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, Marshallese migrants living in the United States are eligible to enroll onto the Arkansas Healthcare Marketplace for private insurance. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich attended a health fair last weekend in Springdale designed to encourage islanders to sign up.
Nian Chakar sits at a table at the Jones Center for Families trying to fill out insurance paperwork while holding her squirming baby girl. Chakar says she doesn't see a doctor except for when she was pregnant. She went to a low-income clinic in Springdale, which serves migrant Marshallese.
Do you hope to enroll by December 15th, and then you will be eligible for medical insurance starting January 1st?
Yes, she says. Nian shows Brandy Cooper an in-person assister guide, her passport, Form I-94, which she received when she entered the U.S., and her Social Security card. Brandy Cooper is based at Friendship Community Care of Washington County.
Yes, well, today is my first time actually being in the population and actually speaking with the Marshallese people individually. So it's been a very nice experience, very interesting, and very insightful as well.
Insightful? Because Marshallese hold a privileged status in the United States. Under a Compact of Free Association, they can travel to the U.S. to live and work without a visa. The U.S. maintains strategic military operations on the Republic of the Marshall Islands, which include a nuclear test bomb program back in the 1950s. As such, islanders are considered lawfully present, making them eligible to enroll in the federal insurance marketplace. As many as 6,000 Marshallese live in Northwest Arkansas, the largest population on the mainland, and the Arkansas Minority Health Commission is encouraging as many islanders as possible to enroll by staging this two-day event, providing free food, health screenings, and translators. Executive Director Idonia Trotter.
My understanding is that Marshall Islanders are eligible to apply under the marketplace for the subsidies that it provides. The income level, not only for the Marshall Islanders, but for everyone, the income levels will make a difference as to how people will qualify for this. What we do know is that in the state of Arkansas, they're not eligible for Medicaid.
Nor are Marshallese eligible for Arkansas's private option, which is expanding Medicaid coverage to tens of thousands more low-income Arkansans. California, Washington State, and Hawaii convey state Medicaid dollars to Marshallese migrants. Arkansas does not. A half dozen IPA guides from various nonprofit and state agencies visit with islanders, including manager Joanna Seitz from Community Clinic in Springdale. She says none have come by the clinic to enroll since the marketplace opened October 1st. She's not had much luck at this event.
So no one has approached us to enroll here. Yes, they have been asking questions about our services at the community clinic, and that's as far as it's extended. We've been giving them information about the Arkansas Health Insurance Marketplace.
Part of the problem is that Marshallese prefer to not discuss personal matters with strangers, but Sandy Harris-Joel's table is packed with Marshallese. She's Marshallese Outreach Coordinator for Credit Counseling of Arkansas. She says new concepts must be embraced by the entire community first to be accepted.
Marshallese are like getting information from each other. It's like a chain. You go, then I follow you. If you have feel it, I will feel it too. You know about it, I will know about it. So it's like people teach each other, and we copy each other from what we learn that is good for us.
She says Marshallese are unsure about the Affordable Care Act because in the first place, they were promised certain entitlements when they moved to the United States.
We believe that we came here to take the advantage of our compact with the United States. There was a document signed, promised that we can come here with free medical. And when we come to Arkansas, there was no free medical.
When Sandy Jo lived on the West Coast, she enrolled in Medi-Cal, California's Medicaid program. And Arkansas Marshallese could be eligible, according to the State Department of Human Services, if Islanders secure legal permanent residency and live here for 5 years. But those qualifications are really strict. And Native Marshallese children have no access to state Our Kids First. So with no insurance and little money, where do these Islanders go for medical care?
They have no choice but to walk in the emergency room.
Or they go to local community clinics, which charge a sliding scale fee. Sandy Joel says she knows many working Islanders who refuse to enroll in their company's insurance because the copay is too high. So she's hoping they will opt into the federal marketplace. Islanders with an income between 100% and 400% of federal poverty will be eligible for generous tax credits.
Most people that come to my office, I deal with them. I help them with budget, so I know the income.
Marshallese activist Melissa Leilon is a board member of the Arkansas Minority Health Commission and helped to organize this event.
Well, first of all, I'm a big fan of this because it will allow a lot of Marshall Islanders that have been left out of the system for a long time. So this is going to be a chance and an opportunity for us to have that coverage that we've been needing for a long time. And not only that, but it also offers discounted rate as well.
Leilon says compared to the Latino population, major barriers exist here.
The other IPA tables, most of them don't have any documentation, any kind of documents translated into Marshallese. We only have two licensed, one licensed IPA and one licensed navigator at this point. And these are Marshallese. I'm talking about Marshallese.
Local and state public health agencies have been assisting Ozark Islanders for almost two decades because they're acutely aware that Marshallese have the highest incidence of tuberculosis, a lung disease, among Pacific Island nations. And Marshallese are at risk for leukemia, thyroid, and breast cancer due to direct or indirect exposure to radiation from U.S. nuclear weapons testing on the Marshalls. Consumption of processed Western foods places them at risk for heart disease and diabetes. LaGoria Payton, a physician assistant with the Arkansas Minority Health Commission and coordinator of this event, is shocked by what she's seeing here.
What I have found, which is really surprising to me because I'm not familiar with this community's health profile, we have a number of people whose blood sugar results were well over 400. They are not under a physician's care. They do not have medication. It's just unbelievable to me.
Blood glucose above 400 is considered a medical emergency. Stephanie Vang, an insurance navigator with Legal Aid of Arkansas based in Fayetteville, has a Marshallese IPA guide on staff. They've managed to pre-enroll several Islanders today.
For most of them, we've just given them the paperwork. The initial response has been a little bit of hesitancy, so most of them just want to take the application home and review it before they actually enroll.
And at home, Marshallese families can decide if the new affordable health care is, affordable. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Later today on This American Life.
Yes, I'm looking for a one-bedroom apartment for me and my wife.
One-bedroom apartment?
Yes, uh-huh.
Have you possibly looked for a place to live lately? It's unpleasant, right?
I don't have nothing.
You don't have anything.
Okay, actually, that's a lie. The guy has places. The secret to get past him and others revealed later today.
This American Life begins later this morning at 10 on KUAF.
In our monthly Spaces series, we take you to some interesting spaces in our listening area. Today, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda takes you backstage at the Walton Arts Center.
Before we see what happens backstage, let's start with what you see on stage. During a Friday morning last month, dozens of workers in black clothing gathered on stage to prepare for the touring production of Beauty and the Beast. Crew members moved set pieces across the stage while others helped mount items to be hung high above the stage. This is an example of the work that must happen before the audience arrives on opening night. The first part of the on-location preparation begins with the load-in. When a touring production comes to town, assistant production manager Valerie Jones explains, the first thing that must be done is emptying trucks from the loading dock, which is located on the west side of the venue. Touring Broadway shows typically travel with several truckloads of material. Beauty and the Beast, for example, used 5 semi-trucks. Jones says the largest show they've had was Jersey Boys, which was billed as 9 trucks, but it really used 10.5 trucks. Jones says it tends to take longer to unload the trucks than to pack them back up, but it's a very organized process. She says they're packed like jigsaw puzzles, with items being unloaded and reloaded in a specific order every time. To make your way back toward the stage in Baumwalker Hall, you must head east from the dock door along a long hallway.
This is our hallway where everybody clocks in, checks in, signs in, our information boards. This is our administrative offices for the production department, and which also doubles as the laundry room for the company. So there is a washer and dryer in there, and they do a lot of laundry.
The next stop on the tour is the tech office.
This office is for 5 people that share these two and a half desks. So this is our technical department, where our head carpenter, our head electrician, and our head of audio reside, as well as their 2 house assistants. We have 2 full-time house crew that work in audio, video, as well as carpentry and electrics.
As we continue down the hall, Jones points out the catering kitchen, which also doubles as a crew lounge during Broadway shows. Next up is the green room, which Jones says is typically used for artist hospitality. But again, that changes when Broadway productions bring larger crews. During these weeks, the green room, which recently received a fresh coat of paint and new posters, becomes a production office for touring companies who move in their own computers and printers to do their work. It's at this point you begin to realize the staff at the Walton Arts Center uses every bit of the venue's space.
As the shows get bigger and we do more of them, I mean, 5 truck show is pretty typical for what's on the road nowadays. You know, and the 9 truck show and the 13 truck shows, those are becoming more typical. They're not making shows smaller. They're continuing to make them bigger. They will travel lighter, you know, so that they can be green. But, you know, the shows are, there's a lot of really big venues out there that can accommodate these shows.
Jones says the Walton Arts Center is classified as small by the International Association of Venue Managers, but they would like to be mid-sized and eventually large. That might happen in the near future as the venue moves forward with its expansion plans. Earlier this month, Fayetteville residents voted to issue $6.9 million in bonds to help fund renovation plans for the 22-year-old venue. Continuing down the hall, we pass by dressing rooms, Jones says, have also been a tight squeeze for some companies. The principal dressing rooms, for example, are designed to comfortably accommodate 1 person. However, they have been occupied by as many as 6 young actors in the case of Billy Elliot. The doors of the dressing rooms have photos of actors along with their names, which Jones says helps wardrobe supervisors know more quickly which actors they are helping get dressed. In addition to realizing how carefully staff must use the area backstage, another surprise is learning how many local residents are a part of the crew.
We have a really good local crew for being a non-union house. We have 130 overhires that are just, you know, people of Fayetteville that love to work in the arts, and they all have other jobs, so they just do this for a little extra money and just to be part of something that's bigger than they are. And it's really interesting that, you know, it helps. Some students do it the whole time they're here going to school, and, you know, some parents do it so that they, you know, can, you know, have other ways to engage their family in the arts, because there are a lot of benefits that come along with working as a member of local crew as well, if you're here long enough.
About 20 local crew members worked on Beauty and the Beast. As you near the end of the long hallway, you'll find a door to your left that leads to the stage, where there are several crew members working. While most of them are dressed in black, each of them has a different color of tape on their shirt. Assistant production manager Valerie Jones explains a color coding system makes it easier for the touring company to know who people are. For example, electricians are typically wearing red tape. Located about 70 feet above the stage is what's called the grid. Jones points to a spiral staircase comprised of more than 80 stairs that serve as the gateway to the grid. Chain motors hang from up there, and they are attached to what's called the fly rail.
Coming at upstage!
And so what the fly rail operators are doing is, because everybody's separated into different teams on stage here. So you've got electricians working, you've got props people working, you've got carpenters working, and as you can see, there's a lot of pipes flying in and out. So everybody that is on stage has been trained to know where they are on the stage and to listen to these calls coming from the rail. So Josh is making sure that everybody on deck knows that something's about to move so that they can be aware of their place, where they are, and know that it's going to come in safely without hitting them in the head.
All right, weight loaders, let's take line set 35 to 540 pounds.
So what they're doing is they're going to put weight on the arbor, because this is a counterweight system. So each one of these bricks is probably about 50 pounds. They come in different denominations. So what he's doing is he is tying that off so that it cannot move. If there's more weight on the pipe that's associated with this particular rope than there is on the arbor, on the counterweight, then it's going to want to move, go up or down. So he's steadying it so it can't move while they change the weight on it.
There is enough room on the fly rail to hang up to 51 items from the grid. Items can include lights, movie screens, and hard set pieces. Jones says they can hang in excess of 2,500 pounds on a single pipe. Sometimes shows travel with a small core group of musicians, and that is supplemented with local musicians. Other times, the larger Broadway shows travel with their own orchestras. When the orchestra pit is in use, the first few rows of seats are removed from Baum Walker Hall. The orchestra pit is often used for storage, so when musicians need to occupy that space, those stored items are moved to Star Theater.
Star Theater, during a Broadway show, is used for wardrobe, wigs and makeup, and then any back storage. Sometimes, depending on the show, some shows that are extremely dance heavy will travel with a physical therapist, and so we'll have to pipe and drape off a physical therapy booth. Sometimes if we have they have musicians that travel with them and the actors are using all of the dressing rooms, we'll have to make a dressing room here for the musicians.
Star Theater's control booth can also be used as a remote studio for musicians in instances where the musical group is so large it won't fit in the orchestra pit, or if a particular section makes it too loud for the other musicians to hear. The musicians in Star Theater can tell what's happening in the orchestra pit in Baum Walker Hall thanks to a live video of the conductor. TV screens are often located in the wings backstage as well, so actors can watch the conductor for their cues. Upon completion of a backstage tour at the Walton Arts Center, it's impressive and perhaps surprising to realize all of the things that happen out of view of the audience to make everything on stage run smoothly.
One of the things that we tell our new hires when they go through training is there are a lot of distractions happening backstage. The two biggest distractions when you're backstage that will cause you to miss a cue are A, you're watching the show, or B, you're watching the people that are coming and going on and off stage, because, you know, we do have small spaces, and the idea is that everybody can change in their dressing room. Well, if you've got 30-second change, that doesn't happen. So at any time, there could be people in various states of dress running around backstage, and everybody's okay with that. You have to be professional and move on. For me, I think that's probably, one of the things that people probably don't think about. I think they have this idea of, the star of the show, and they're sitting in front of their mirror and they're doing their hair and they're like, 5 minutes, and it's like, that happens at the beginning of the show, but once the show starts, it's off to the races, and then it's over before you know it.
More information about the venue is available at waltonartcenter.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
It is Sunday, November 24th, 2013. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. Good morning. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Morning.
Good morning.
Morning. I'm not going to see you again until next Sunday.
That's right. You're taking off.
I am.
New Orleans. Going to your favorite place in the world.
Oh, yes, I am, for my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
I will turn some unannounced, undefined, and unreasonable number in New Orleans. But in the meantime, if you're looking for something to do, mm-hmm. stop by the Rogers Historical Museum for an exhibit called Art from the Earth.
Pottery,
is this
right?
The clay
mm-hmm.
pottery.
Yeah.
Well, it's pottery from prehistoric through the mid-century collectible pottery. It was fun talking to Terry Lynn Wendling about putting the exhibit together because it's a little bit like baking a cake. What do you have? What can you borrow from a neighbor?
Right.
And what do you want it to taste like? And then you go out and get it. They borrowed from University Museum and Shiloh Museum to come up with the pottery that starts with Caddo and Mississippian and then goes all the way through Nile Oak, which was made in Arkansas and is very collectible.
Can I just say how happy it makes me that the museums work together, too, to
Isn't
help each
fun?
Other put exhibits together?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they wanted something, it was in their thought process that they wanted something artsy.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't just do artsy because they're a history museum.
Right.
So let's talk about the history of pottery. And since I tend to collect mid-century modern China, I got to go see this.
There you go.
This continues through February 22nd. Gallery hours are 10 to 5 Monday through Saturday. And I believe they are open Friday after Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay.
Be good.
So give them a shot, 621-1154. Also this afternoon, the Snow Train Village is open until 5 o'clock at the Carnegie Library Annex in Eureka Springs.
Mm-hmm.
They're in an admission charge of $2 to $5. Drop-in drawing is from 1 to 4 at Crystal Bridges with materials and an art instructor provided.
Wow.
And
that's
free.
It's a good deal.
Yeah. That is a good deal.
No registration. Show up, ask them where they're doing drop-in drawing, and draw. Tim Ernst is at the Fayetteville Public Library at 2 o'clock to talk about his new Buffalo River photographs. Eco Watch Tour at 3. These are so much fun. If you've never been, I spent all last year suggesting this. Guess what? I'm going to do it again. Rocky Branch Marina near Rogers. It's hosted by Hobbs State Park, and tickets are $5 to $10. And if you're in the River Valley, there's a percussion concert with Gregory Lyons from Louisiana Tech University and the UAFS Percussion Ensemble at 3 at the Smith Pendergraft Campus Center. It is free and presumably loud.
Yeah,
probably.
Great. Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, and to you as well.
And happy birthday.
Aw, thank you.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Yesterday was the 50th anniversary of the launch of the television show Doctor Who.
Yes. It's a British. Well, it started out British.
Oh, I think it's still British.
It's still British. Okay.
Let's first admit this. You and I combined know very little about Doctor Who.
We do. Growing up, my father watched it, but I mean, I was little, so
right.
I really don't remember much about the show.
I've seen maybe a total of 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing against it, just anyway. It's a big deal for a lot of people around the world. And yesterday in Siloam Springs and many other places, they watched this season's premiere in honor of the 50th anniversary of the first show.
Yes.
So we're using the word "who" as a springboard to this Sunday's montage.
Who put the bomb in the bomb, bomb, bomb? Who put the rhyme in the ram-a-lama ding dong? Who put the bop in the bop, shabop, shabop? Who put the dip in the dip, 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 dip?
Enemy of the Daleks!
Exterminate!
Wait!
Well then, a new form of Dalek. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, Daddy really thought that George had the stuff to take over when he was ready to retire.
Wait a minute, Martha.
And we both thought that naturally...
Stop it, Martha.
What do you want?
I wouldn't go on with this if I were you.
Oh, you wouldn't, would you? Will you not?
You've already sprung a leak about you-know-what.
What? What?
About the sprout, the little bugger, our son.
I walk 47 miles of barbed wire. I use a cobra snake for a necktie. I got a brand new house on the roadside, made from rattlesnake hide. I got a brand new chimney made on top, made out of a human skull. Now come on, take a little walk with me, Arlene, and tell me who do you love? Who do you love? Who do you love?
Then he heard it again. Just a very faint yelp. As if some tiny person were calling for help. He looked and he looked. He could see nothing.
Who let the dogs out?
When you pay off the first baseman every month, who gets the money?
Every dollar of it. He does. Sometimes his wife comes down and collects it.
Whose wife?
Yes. Why not, Lou? He's earned it.
Who did?
Yes.
Want to know the 10 clips that we use in our salute to who?
Go to OzarksAtLarge.com.
Satirical news is a booming business. The Daily Show and Stephen Colbert deliver installments through the week. The Onion website rolls out fake news every day, and that 39-year-old standby weekend update on Saturday Night Live continues to poke fun at newsmakers as well. This year, an Arkansas-centric phony news source began delivering all the news that isn't. Rock City Times dispenses a new, not news item almost every day with deep Arkansas ties. Past parodies have been about Dillard's sponsoring a meager Thanksgiving parade in downtown Little Rock, or an Arkansas man who just couldn't stop eating Red Lobster biscuits. The Razorback football team's woes and political scandals get their share of attention as well. This week, I asked Greg Henderson, the man behind Rock City Times, if he's been influenced by some of those popular national satirical sources.
I tend to take a little bit mix of all of them and throw the Borowitz report in there as well. It's now part of the New Yorker. And where Borowitz does one update per day, basically, you know, every day a week, and that was sort of the, you know, mindset of doing one news update per day. Sort of like the Daily Show, I mean, my satire typically is more about the local media, you know, kind of playing on local media. That's why I keep a very strict kind of news-style approach to it. And then, like, you know, weekend update, I try to, you know, kind of take real issues and play on them and make them funny as possible. So, yeah, it certainly is a blend of all those. They all served as inspiration for it.
The under the masthead on the website Rock City Times is the motto, Arkansas's second most unreliable news source. Are you poking at someone specifically there, or do you let the reader decide who's the first most unreliable?
You know, it was just something that I kind of threw out there. I believe it was Hertz or Enterprise or something like that a while back used to claim themselves as the second largest car rental company in America. And the thought was is that, you know, we'll leave whoever wants to be number one to just decide that on their own, and we'll just go ahead and grab number two because nobody ever fights over number two. And so that was a little bit of the thought behind that. I really wanted something just to be kind of ambiguous and let people come up with their own conclusions on that.
Was there, as you were considering launching this, was there ever a concern that there wouldn't be enough material in Arkansas to satirize?
Yeah, actually a little bit at first. In fact, this all started in actually 2012, not 2013. I did it for about a month and a half or so and kind of got, you know, busy with other stuff. And, you know, I didn't really spend the time digging into the news like I do now. And so, yeah, there actually was a dead period there where, you know, I just didn't, you know, never felt quite inspired to get it back up. And then, you know, once you really dig into what goes on in Arkansas every day, when you pay attention, close attention, there's plenty to poke fun at.
The site has paid advertising. I'm going to guess that you're not going to have a check anytime soon from Dillard's.
No, probably not. And, you know, I have a rule. I really do. I honestly have a rule. I try to make it as positive to local businesses as humanly possible. I really tried from the very beginning and try to this day to support local businesses who support the community. And I think that was, you know, the Dillard's thing. I did break my rule a little bit there, but they are so terrible to the community sometimes that it almost needed to happen. They're probably the least friendly major company to the city in all of Little Rock.
You mentioned the Borowitz report from the New Yorker. I remember when the Borowitz launched because suddenly, about once a day for a while, I was seeing someone retweet something from the Borowitz report thinking it was true. It was in the New Yorker and they didn't understand yet the concept. I have seen or heard at least two of your stories mentioned, shared, people thinking they were real. The article you had about the newspaper ad in a Conway newspaper that it was a garage sale held by a gay couple and the items they were selling, and then a 5-year-old killing this special kind of deer. Both of those had some traction on Twitter, people thinking they were honest-to-goodness stories. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, this goes back quite a ways. Even, you know, I think May was the first time we really had a story that ran kind of crazy like that. And had, you know, two or three consistently every month that have been picked up pretty large as, you know, and some people believe it's real. It's really dying down a bit. People are starting to kind of get the joke now. But certainly when something goes national, it is. I think the one thing that bothers me the most is occasionally, you know, when something, especially like when the Red Lobster biscuit story went, you'll have to dig that back up a little bit. It was back in June. You know, people were, you know, throwing out, oh, you guys are just making up a hoax. And, you know, I mean, that's something I'm pretty sensitive to as well. I mean, hoax is something where people are intentionally deceiving. You know, what I'm doing is just writing satire. I'm not deceiving anybody. I don't throw out anything real. In fact, a lot of people have joked that maybe I should do a real story on
April Fool's
Day just to be different. But yeah, I mean, it's not a hoax. I mean, everything's, you know, everything is fake. I make as many disclaimers as humanly possible. And sorry, there's just some really gullible people in the world that believe anything they read.
I know that when, like, The Gridiron, which is a satirical show, annual show up here that's put on by journalists, when they put something on and sometimes they leave somebody out, they didn't make fun of someone, they'll hear about that some newsmaker will say, hey, am I not worthy of satire or parody? Have you had anyone suggest yet, hey, why haven't you made fun of me or put the spotlight on my organization?
In a way, there's some local companies and stuff that have been like, you know, hey, I'd really, you know, like you to, you know, write an article about us. Just give us a little bit more exposure. And I'm usually willing to do that. You know, because it's usually hit or miss. I mean, there's no telling if something's going to get, you know, 2,000 reads or if something's going to get 500,000 reads. It's really just a shot in the dark a lot of times as far as if it's going to go viral or not. So a lot of companies have been very interested in me writing articles that incorporate them, writing articles, you know, even about them sometimes. So, yeah, I've gotten some of that. As far as, you know, politicians and stuff really honestly try to avoid me, I think.
Greg Henderson is the creator of the Rock City Times, a website devoted to satirical Arkansas-based news. You can read the fake news at rockcitytimes.com.
So on Friday's edition of Ozarks at Large, you had over 20 students inside the Furman and Garner Performance Studio.
25 members of the Bentonville High School Chamber Choir who will be performing the Madrigal Dinner next month. And they sang 4 songs for me inside the performance studio. 3 were on the Friday daily edition. Here's one more.
No.
25 members of the Bentonville High School Chamber Choir. They will be performing the high school's 19th annual and final Madrigal Dinner at First Christian Church in Bentonville, December 5, 6, 7, and 8. Terry Hicks, the director of choirs at Bentonville, accompanying us. You can hear the whole thing if you go to the OzarksAtLarge.com webpage and look for Friday's show.
Since I missed Friday's show, will you just fill me in on really quickly why it's the final one?
Yes, Terry said he started the Madrigal Dinner as a way to get more kids interested in chamber choir and choir. And boy, has that succeeded. Now there are so many who are interested that he needs to come up with something that gets more of them involved in the winter activity. And okay. He has an idea. He was very coy. He didn't tell me what it was. So it's not for lack of success. If anything, it's because what the Madrigal Dinner was intended to do was a rousing success.
Okay.
So.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
All right.
And I appreciate their time very much.
Okay. And you can find out more about that at BentonvilleChoirs.com.
Yes, okay. As well as tickets to any of the Madrigal shows, including the dessert-only one. That is not just dinner, but just dessert and music.
Okay.
You're going to talk to Tim Ernst today.
I am going to talk to Tim Ernst. Beckett mentioned that he will be at the Fayetteville Public Library this afternoon. And after he gives that program, after he gives that talk, he's going to walk across the street over here to the studios. And I get to talk to him. I'm kind of excited about it. I've seen his pictures pretty much my whole life and have never met him.
Well, he's a great interview. And ask him for me about his trip to Iceland.
Okay.
And that's why you're talking to him and not me, because he would never get away.
No, you would talk to him because you love Iceland.
I
do. Went there in June.
Yes.
And you would talk to him for hours on end.
Yes. So, as a public service to you, Tim Ernst, I will not be talking to you.
Okay. Well, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Centerton.
And Ozarks at Large, Weekend Ozarks at Large, is a production of KUAF 91.3 FM. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
You have tomorrow's show all by your lonesome.
I know. I'll be here by myself.
You and I back together on Thursday.